Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Monday and Thursday evening, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also pick it up on numerous platforms, Podomatic, Spotify, Amazon, and maybe a dozen or so more. It is brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp, a ladies' weekend retreat, and a family retreat in the fall. And for more information about those events and other activities, please visit our website, campconstitution.net. Also, take notice of the download section. We have some great resources. We have pamphlets and booklets and books. And we have our YouTube channel, and our Podomatic channel has a playlist with all kinds of great topics. So people ask me, do you have anything on the Constitution we want to teach? We want to teach our children, or our homeschool group wants something on the Constitution. And I say, visit our YouTube channel, go to our playlist, look up Constitution, and you just get hours and hours of first-class presenters discussing the various aspects of the Constitution. So anyway, we had a busy week last week from a float in the St. Patrick's Day Parade. That's in Boston. That's the first time we've ever done that. And we had Reverend Stevie Craft here in Alton, New Hampshire, Thursday night at the Community Church of Alton, where he gave a presentation entitled Critical Race Theory or Crazy Racist Trash. And that video has been uploaded on both our Rumble and YouTube channel. We also were given a show, a weekly half-hour show on a format called Catching Fire News, which if you visit that website, I think it's Catching Fire News, you'll find it. It's in the early stages. There is no programming right now. Programs are being recorded, and it's brought to you by Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center. He has been a longtime friend and colleague. Tom is one of the top experts on Agenda 21. And somebody had funded him to do this. And it's similar to Mike Lindell's Frank Speech. And I know there's a lot of great programming out there, and we're hoping. I was very honored and flattered that he wanted to give me a half hour of the weekly schedule. Anyway, I did one interview already with Barbara from Harlem. I'm interviewing Dr. Felicia Nace today. And also on a local scale, the Wolfboro Cable TV, which is in the town next door, they wanted to videotape Reverend Craft. And since the church already was going to videotape it, so they said, great, we don't have to send our cameras, we'll use theirs. And they're offering us a show, and they also want to put our show on networks, other cable stations around the state. So we're making a lot of progress in the liberty movement here, as grim as things may be looking elsewhere. So I want to talk a little bit about the U.S. Supreme Court and a lot of the misconceptions about the Supreme Court. First off, the Supreme Court is not the highest law of the land. We hear that said, and an old law professor of mine once said, saying something doesn't make it so. And that's an example. Just like the president isn't supposed to be the most powerful man in the free world. That's not in the Constitution. The Supreme Court, actually, when you look at the Constitution, look at Article 3. And it's probably the shortest article in the, one of the shortest. There's only three sections, and nowhere does it say that the Supreme Court is the highest law of the land. Also, and this was been pointed out to me, Supreme Court appointments are not necessarily lifetime. They actually are during good behavior, which means a Supreme Court justice can be impeached and removed, not just impeached, but removed from office. That has not happened. There's been Supreme Court justices. A few have been, Sam and Chase have been impeached. Well, actually, there has been one impeached, and that would be that back in the early 1800s. And I wrote an article about it recently. I just can't think of his name, but it's a very rare thing. But of course, the Supreme Court's in the news because there'll be an opening pretty soon. And Biden, he said, I'm appointing a black woman. Now, they passed civil rights legislation over the years, basically saying you can't hire people based on race. Well, that's exactly what he's doing. So if I own a business and I might say, oh, gee, I only want to hire white women. You know, if I own a restaurant, I just want white women as waitresses. Or I want white women that have a certain particular look about them. Oh, that's discrimination. I can be fined. I can lose my business, lose my license. Oh, yes, the media will come after me as some kind of bigoted, extremist racist. But if I'm a white guy and I say I'm pandering to what I think is my my voter base, I'm going to appoint a black woman. Just like he said, I'm going to appoint a black woman as vice president. And he appointed someone who, you know, Kamala Harris. I guess he was, I don't know if I say he was smart, but he's been a politician all his life. So he has that innate cleverness and deception. He probably said, I'm going to appoint someone who is not nearly as capable as I, because that will discourage people from impeaching me or demanding I resign because of my incompetence. You know, we get rid of Biden, we get Kamala Harris. We get rid of Kamala Harris under the secession, the law on presidential secession. We get Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. In other words, we are in some trouble, folks. As a Christian, I have to say that we know that God's on the throne, and that's the comforting thing, because we have nothing but incompetence or worse. Either incompetence in the case of Biden, but Biden is a far left. Well, I should say this. If he thought he could be conservative-minded and get away with it, he probably would. But he is pandering to the far left, to the anti-American far left in this country. He somehow thinks that's the way to go. And what I find ironic is these same leftists that want to fly the flag of Ukraine places, they're the last ones to fly the U.S. flag. In fact, they'll spit on it. They'll kneel in front of it in defiance of the national anthem. But they think the borders of the Ukraine are sacrosanct, and we must do whatever we can. And I've mentioned this before, too. They are calling anybody who might question our involvement in the Ukraine or in Ukraine Russian propaganda, misinformation. Gee, these are the same folks that were telling us how much they love Russia from the days of Stalin. Walter Duranty of the New York Times going over there, witnessing the forced famine in the Ukraine and saying, I have seen the future and it works. Lying, deceiving people. And he gets a Pulitzer Prize for that, and he never got it rescinded, even though everything he said was a lie, a dangerous lie. You know, lies are bad, but some lies don't cause lives. It cause policy changes and misinforming and lie. Not just misinforming. See, you can repeat something that you believe is true, but it isn't. That's it's an error of fact. You're not deliberately lying. You know, I've said things over the years, for example, when I would quote the Second Amendment and I'd say the militia is the National Guard and all able-bodied males between the age of 18 and 45. And I was incorrect, because even though that's the law is incorrect. So we sometimes say things that we don't know, we think is true. So I can't, although there's a lot of times there are things that we want to believe are true, and we don't go to great lengths to verify what we're saying. And I think all people are guilty of that to some extent. But when I hear things, sometimes I will say, oh, I wish it were true, but I can't, I have to verify that. You know, when I heard about this entity called QAnon, that there were thousands of patriotic civil servants that were secretly undermining the Obama administration. And then they had all these 10,000 sealed indictments of all these leftists in the government that were ready to go. I didn't believe it. I said, I want to believe this, but I just can't. And, you know, when you've been an activist, a freedom activist for as long as I have, we've pretty much heard everything. Just recently, I was at a gathering in Massachusetts, and a gentleman, a really sincere guy, got up and he started saying that the Declaration of Independence, and he wasn't coming from a left-wing perspective. And I rolled my eyes and I said, oh my goodness, here we go. Another, Here we go again. And I've heard these things over the years, and just the opposite is true. But I think a lot of people, they have itching ears, and they think, well, you've been doing this for how many years, and look where we are now, and so we got to do something different. And you do the same thing, you do the same thing, expecting different results. Well, what we're trying to do, folks, is promote liberty, freedom, whether or not people pick up on it. Now, for example, I've been advocating that getting our children out of government schools since the early 90s, if not earlier. Late 80s is when I got the advice. And I looked into the government schools and I made a determination that I'm going to put my children in government schools. And that's what I did. And I encouraged so many. Did they take me up? Some did. And some thanked me for doing that. But most didn't. But that didn't prevent me from keep on doing what I do. And now it's come full circle. Now you see parents complaining about what's going on in the schools. They're actually going to school meetings for the first time. But it took three generations. The schools have been pretty rotten for a long time. And it took this long for so many parents. And it took critical race theory. I guess evolution wasn't enough. Promoting socialism wasn't enough. Promoting homosexuality. Now it's transgenderism. And it's being promoted aggressively. You know, there used to be a thing called a Latin term by in loco parentis, which means in place of the parents. So when I send my child to a government school, they have an obligation not to do things contrary to what I do or what I believe. So if my child is a Jew, that child will not be told being Jewish is wrong or bad. If that child is a Baptist, then in that school, they will not say anything that that will change that position, et cetera, et cetera. So the schools weren't interested in what gender you're a boy or a girl. They weren't interested in destroying your faith. They didn't turn their parents against you. They didn't talk about how many genders and how many pronouns and all this stuff. That stuff wasn't done. And when they used to pray in school, it was sort of a non-denominational prayer. They would just get up there and thank God. I don't even believe that they might have said in Christ's name if the school was all Christians, or if there was a Jewish person in this, it may be sensitive that they may not be. But bottom line is that pretty much the teachers weren't there to destroy your faith, destroy your patriotism and love of freedom. They were there to teach you the basics, whether it be math, English, science, etc. And that's totally changed. They are change agents. They are there to destroy the faith of your child and turn your child into a socialist, an atheist, evolutionist. And that's what our late friend Sam said for many, many years. Anyway, getting back to the Supreme Court a little bit here. So Biden chose Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. She's the D.C. I think she's a D.C. Circuit Court. And she, of course, is a far leftist. It was interesting, too. There was another bit more misinformation that she was the first black woman nominated for the Supreme Court. Well, that's not true. There was one under the Bush administration. I can't recall her name. I posted it on my Facebook page. And Biden did his utmost to prevent that person from being chosen. So, see, it's not about color of skin. It's about ideology. And the fact is, Justice Jackson here is a far leftist. She has a predilection to go soft on child porn. It was, I never thought that the child pornography and this is as deep as it is. We hear about the island there, Jeffrey Epstein, and all the celebrities and all the underage girls. Of course, he ends up committing suicide, quotation marks, in prison. Some really top people go there. We hear about that place in California there where they, mostly Republicans, where the men worship an owl, Bohemian Grove, and the notion that there's a belief that there's underage sex children being, I don't know about that. It's kind of weird what they do, but I think it's a lot more pervasive than I ever thought, that this child sex rings and such. It's You see, I don't see them much anymore, but used to see children's faces on milk cartons missing, you know, missing. And it's always somebody who's 10, 11, 12, 13 years of age, it seems. So, and I just learned that a Democrat operative, former gubernatorial candidate in Maine, Democrat, big Democrat donor, wealthy person, has just been caught with child porn. And so he has nothing to worry about. If he gets convicted, he can appeal it. And Justice Jackson will go probably in support of a very light sentence. I think she gave someone with child pornography a 3-month sentence. And even the liberal prosecutor was actually asking for 2 years. And then she was asked during the confirmation hearings by the senator from Tennessee, can you define what a woman is? And she said she couldn't. She said, I'm not a biologist. Well, I could define a woman. I'm not a biologist either, but I'm a male, and I can define a female. A female or a woman is a female adult member of the human race. Pretty simple. I don't think anybody can question that. But that's how far this woke left-wing culture is. You can't even define what a woman is. USA Today had made that cross-dressing, so-called transgender, a male, a woman of the year. What a slap in the face of women. Bad enough, you got a guy who's 6'4", who was a kind of a mediocre swimmer at the college level. I mean, he's a better swimmer than I will ever be or ever was. I think he was ranked 440th of all the college swimmers, male swimmers. I don't know how many college college swimmers are in the United States, but he was ranked 440th, so it might put him at the middle of the pack. Probably still pretty good. You know, it's like a triple-A baseball player that spent a couple of weeks in the majors and he gets cut. You think, oh, this guy, he's not really good. But then you see him on the field and you say, wow, that guy's pretty good. Yeah, he only spent 2 weeks in the majors, but even at that level, that's pretty tough. That's pretty good. So from a mediocre male swimmer to a top female swimmer, I mean, not just a little, by a lot. That's pretty outrageous. And that's how far this has gone. And you know, I made a little joke about the Aesop's fable, the emperor's new clothes, where these people in this little fictional kingdom, this weaver comes in and tells his king he's got a new wardrobe, and of course he's got nothing on, and all the people are admiring what a great wardrobe he has. And this little child said, "The emperor has no clothes." And all of a sudden, everybody woke up. Well, today, if a little child was to say something like that, he'd be called a fascist and probably be deplatformed and made to go mandatory sensitivity training and what have you. That's how far things have gone, you know. So it's like I was talking about the musical with the Von Trapp family, and that was I'm getting a mental block, but I think everyone knows what I'm talking about. The family that came from Austria, and they end up coming to the United States. The Sound of Music, that's it. And it was loosely based on a true story. They got a lot of the facts wrong. But in the movie, in the show, it has the captain, who was a U-boat commander. In real life, he was a U-boat commander during World War I. And this was right before the Nazis, right as the Nazis were taking over Austria. And so he was an Austrian patriot. Then you had a lady who, Maria, she was a nun who ended up marrying the captain and the children. And it shows this little neo-Nazi that was Hitler Youth that was one of the young men that liked one of the daughters. But I can imagine if they put a spin on it today, they would have the children as all transgenders. The captain would have been a Nazi war criminal. And Maria would be some type of New Age nun, or what they call some kind of anti-Catholic nun, you know. So that would be the take on it if they made it today. So let's hope they don't do that. Anyway, I do encourage the listeners, though, to get a copy of the Constitution and just read Article 3 and see for yourself that what the Supreme Court justice. You know, the Supreme Court justice, as I said earlier, that is not the law of the land. They're supposed to hear the case, and they do have, they don't have unlimited jurisdiction. They only take about 80 cases a year. So most of the cases they get are, you know, they just let the lower court decision stand. Stare decisis, I think, is the Latin. I don't speak Latin very well, as you can imagine, but let the lower court stand. In many cases, that's how it is. And with our case, they decided to hear it. They have not announced their ruling on it. We're waiting for that any minute. But they don't make the laws. They might judge a law, the constitutionality of a law, but they don't make the laws. And they don't enforce the laws. So they come up with a decision. It's up to the Attorney General to enforce it. So this horrible Roe v. Wade decision, by the way, I recommend the movie Roe v. Wade. It's a little on the long side, and it's hard to tell the story in 30 minutes. It's about an hour and 50 minutes. But, you know, when people binge watch, that's like two shows, two and a half shows. So you can binge watch some stupid situation comedy. You can spend a little time watching this movie. But it was fascinating because it got to the inner workings of the Supreme Court. You know, we see these nine people in black robes and you think everybody, they're all smiling when they're pictured together. Lots of stuff goes on behind that closed door and or outside those closed doors. But you saw the we learned that two of the justices, I think it was Justice Warren, who was the Chief Justice, and maybe Harry Blackmun, both of them. Oh, no, I can't remember the second justice who had either a wife or a daughter working or volunteering for Planned Parenthood. They should have recused themselves right away. And the initial vote, there was only seven justices. There was two vacancies, and they had not been confirmed. And so they took the vote. The first vote was 4-3. And Berger voted in favor against Roe v. Wade. And then the pressure was put on him by his family. And he said, we want to take this vote over again. And so the two new appointees, Rehnquist and I can't remember the second one, they came on, and both of them were, you know, very pro-life. And so they ended up being 7-2 in favor of killing babies. And there was practically every state, with the exception of New York and California, that had rescinded their anti-abortion laws. They had basically struck down all the state laws. So instead of making it illegal, now states could regulate abortion. And states did, to some extent. And now they're repealing those rulings. So it just shows you how disgusting and how dirty the Supreme Court can be. And also, again, it was up to the Attorney General. So let's say that Alabama said, you know what? We're not changing our laws. We're not going to regulate abortion. It's illegal. It's going to stay that way. We don't care about what Roe v. Wade said. So what's the recourse? Well, then, you know, the federal government will either send the Attorney General down or federal marshals to arrest the governor, arrest the state officials. Or they say, well, tell you what, you're not going to comply, then we're not going to give you any federal money. And so you get pressure, the governor and the legislator. Well, gee, if we don't get that federal money, we're going to have to cut this, cut that, or raise the taxes. You see how it works? You see how clever the federalization of the states? And, you know, these people that want to advocate an Article 5 convention to get the states right, the rights of the state. They don't want to say states' rights, but the balance of power. Most of these people who support an Article 5 will be the last ones to say, we don't want the federal money. The federal money will continue to flow as long as the people in the states put up with it. So, yeah, it might be a little hard, but you think about it. Federal government gets its money outside of the money that they just create out of thin air, but the revenue comes from the people in the 50 states. So they take it. They keep a big chunk of it for themselves and to wage a war against America, to the Great Reset and the Green New Deal. And then they give you a little, you know, crumbs off the table. And we have to be so appreciative of that. Oh, my goodness, if it weren't for the government doing this, where would we be? And that's quite tragic. That's why it's so important. So many people out there call themselves constitutionalists. Well, then you look at how they vote and how they think. This guy, Dick Morris, he's on Newsmax. He was a Clinton advisor. He was a Trump advisor. And he's supposed to be an advocate of the Constitution. And he uses the term democracy all the time, democracy. And he's really a neocon who likes the idea of big government. He actually was against the justices at the Supreme Court ruling in favor of this Mississippi law. I think it's Missouri law. And he said, most Americans are okay with no abortion after 23 weeks. He said, I think he got those facts out of thin air. Because I think most Americans don't even think too much about it. It's not like there's, like the average American's okay with killing babies, but don't kill babies after 24 weeks. I think he lied. I don't think those stats are even there. I think most Americans are not in favor of abortion. But he's saying that, no, we need to keep abortion the way it is, or we're going to lose the midterms. Well, that shows me that he's really an operative. He's not a patriot. He's not a true conservative, and he certainly isn't a professing Christian, because they would say no. The ruling should honor God. And if the Republicans don't win the midterms, so be it. You have to do what's right. You can't say, if we do this, this will happen. We won't win the midterms. So we win the midterms, then what? You'll get some good Republicans that will do the right thing. You're going to get some that are going to play along with Pelosi and Schumer. And is that a big deal? You know, so we really need to, people really need to understand the Constitution. It's not just some kind of, a little ephemeral document. It's kind of quaint with some nice words. They got to understand it, then abide by it. And that's at all levels. So if you're a state rep, you'd say, look, that federal money, it's unconstitutional. Not just the money that's going to the Ukraine or going to here, going to foreign countries, but coming into my state. It's unconstitutional. It's unconstitutional for federal money to come into the schools, into the state colleges. So it needs to be stopped. They need to stop doing it. You know, I had it was a libertarian guy that was, I think he was advocating an Article 5 convention. This was a few years ago here in New Hampshire. And I said, what are you doing about stopping federal money to the government, to the state colleges? Have you proposed any bills to actually privatize the state college? Or what about a bill that would do away with the state liquor stores? So he's talking about, liberty, liberty, we need Article 5. I said, but you've done nothing in the state of New Hampshire to promote liberty. You're okay with federal money coming in to the, you're okay with the state colleges. You're okay with a state liquor store. And you're turning around and telling me that you're a libertarian. And I haven't seen one piece of legislation that really encourages libertarian principles, or not libertarian, but liberty principles, limited government principles. Yeah, he says, I think he said we need to get the state out of the marriage business. I said, really? But it's okay to be in the liquor business and in the education business, you see. So he didn't quite like that. And I don't know I can't remember if he got reelected, and I don't think so. So we got a few minutes left. I just want to encourage the listeners to share this program. Visit our website to learn more about what we have to offer. We have some great resources. I want to also mention the Blumenfeld Archive, which is on our website. Sam Blumenfeld, the pioneer in the homeschool movement, and we have people every day that are signing up for the archive as they learn about it, and they're reaching out to all kinds of people, teaching people how to read through our website, Alpha Phonics. It's great. So I want to thank you for listening, and until next week, may God richly bless you.